dismissed this morning. And Donovan, I'm glad that probably he doesn't have an assistant pastor named Clark Gable, because all the ladies of whatever age would be probably gone like the wind from this place. So, did you like that one? All right. Every 5 or 6 years, I get a good one. Well, it's good to see everyone this morning. I don't know if you've seen, as she's not in here, I think her and Andrew are in the children's church or something, but you see Julie today. You see a special cloud or the brightness kind of something or aura about her. It's because the Carolina Tar Heels are the champions. Don't encourage her, please. John chapter 7 this morning, the passage that Joe read with us, read to us this morning, where it's the passage we're going to be at. I'm going to look at something this morning. It won't be a PowerPoint. It'll be three simple points that you'll be able to quickly catch and write down this morning, and I'll make sure I emphasize those, so for you that want to take notes, can catch those. There was a poem that was written in the Middle Ages around 1370, and the name of that poem was The Vision of Piers Plowman. And it is a theological allegory of what it meant to be a Christian. And in this poem, the author, William Langland, refers to the four cardinal virtues in the Christian life: prudence, justice, fortitude, and temperance. Patience is one of those characteristics of fortitude. In other words, the ability to endure pain or hardship in this poem. And in this poem, there is a famous line that says this: sufferance is a sovereign virtue. And ever since that poem, we have been haunted with the phrase, patience is a virtue. Sometimes we hear that phrase and we don't like the person who tells us, right? Oh, we've been saying that to children. Have you ever been on a long trip and you get a half an hour on the trip and the kids say, are we there yet? And perhaps the parental response is, patience is a virtue, to which that goes right over the child's head. Or perhaps maybe bigger kids are in line at Kroger or Meijer or someplace like that. And of course, bigger kids would never be impatient, but maybe your spouse has nudged you and said, patience is a virtue, or some sort of situation like that. Simply put, the ability to wait is a quality of excellence that we should all display. And so I've mentioned there that the Carolina Tar Heels have won the national championship, and so for the next year, I'm going to have to patiently take all the little jibes and things that Julie says. It's going to be a difficult year for me as a Clemson fan. Nonetheless, in the passage today, Jesus is going to display patience as a virtue in a really brilliant way. And I want to look here at his actions, and we can learn three things. The first thing that we're going to learn this morning from this passage, as we're going to look at, number one, the demands on time. And we're going to see this, demands on time, and we're going to see this in verses 1 through verse number 5. In chapter 7, in verse number 1, the Bible tells us after this, Jesus went about in Galilee, and he would not go down to Judea because the Jews were seeking to kill him. Now, it's approximately 6 months or so, roughly 6 months. They say specifically between 5 and 7 months. So approximately 6 months after Jesus displays, in a miraculous way, remember, that he alone is all sufficient. Now, do you remember how he did that? We've been looking at that. The first way that he did that was he turned those 5 loaves and 2 fishes into an innumerable amount of food and bread, and as he did that miraculous feeding of the 5,000, which really the issue was not the miracle in and of itself, although that was an amazing thing, but what that miracle pointed to was that Jesus is all sufficient. Okay, and then within that larger pericope, right in the middle was this small section where Jesus walks on the water, and it almost looks kind of out of place, but what he was he was illustrating and teaching the disciples, because remember the audience was believers, specifically those 12. And so really for us, we were able to learn as a faith family, if you're a believer, we learn that, look, no matter in the storms that rage in life or whatever goes on, the uncomfortable waves that are going to beat against the ship that is your life, Jesus is all sufficient even within those difficult times of life. We've all had them and we will all have them in the future as well. And so those two really amazing events were not just miracles in and of himself. And in other words, it wasn't just this carnival Jesus that did these amazing things, but they were intended to point us to the fact that Jesus is all sufficient. And so after this happens about 6 months, Jesus continues in this northern Galilee area. So in your mind's eye, in that map, if you could look, remember, we have the sea and then just up in that Galilee region and then down south where it was where Jerusalem was and Judea. And so the text tells us here that he would not go to Judea because the Jews were seeking to kill him. It's September and it's October now. How do we know this? Well, look at verse number 2. In verse 2, the scripture says, "Now the Jews' feast of booths was at hand." Every September, October, remember their months were different than ours. And I think, I can't remember off the top of my head, I think the name of this month for them was Tisri, something like that. And so it would have been our September and our October time frame. There were three major feasts or celebrations or events that most every typical male Jewish male would go to every year. One of those was Passover, which we looked at, and that has been mentioned actually a couple times already. We're going to look at one more Passover, and that will be the last Passover Jesus has. Then there was this one called the Feast of Booths, or another name for it you might have heard is the Feast of Tabernacles. That was the same thing. And so this feast was near at this time. And then Jesus' brothers, we see in verse number 3, it says, "So his brothers said to him." Now, what does it mean when it says here, brothers? Well, Matthew 13 tells us that he had four brothers. And those brothers and their names were, here in this passage, in Matthew 13, it tells us James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas. These were the actual biological brothers of Jesus. Now, remember, you're saying biological. Remember, all right, he was 100% man, but he was also 100% God. Enough to kind of make you crazy if you want to try to figure that out. But nonetheless, by faith, we accept that Jesus was conceived virginally and had a natural human birth and was also 100% God. But his parents also had at least four other children that we're aware of, and their names were James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas, common names. Okay? And these four brothers highly encouraged Jesus to go south to the annual feast. Now, why would they encourage Jesus to go? Well, as I said, this was one of the ones that these typical Jewish males would go to, and so it would have been a natural thing for them to do. But also because it really was the most, quote-unquote, fun or joyous celebration of the three that they had. And here's why. It was the end of the vine season and the grain season. And so at the end of this harvest season, they would celebrate and they would remember God's blessing, specifically when it came to the grapes and the grain. And so they would have these joyous festival. This would be part of a joyous festival and a lot of we would say in our modern vernacular, this party going on, this feast going on, where they would celebrate sometimes really late, even into the night. And so this would, for them, was the culmination of, it's like, for them, it was like the cold glass of lemonade after a long Saturday working in the yard, you know, where you could just kind of relax. And so here was their harvest season, and then they had this feast at the end of, so it was the end of work for them in a way, before the next season and the time that they would sow. But this was the end of the reaping season. So this was the most fun and joyous. Also, it also was a picture of the great Exodus, because it celebrated really God's provision for them. And so they would reflect upon this just like Passover and such. And so there was that reason as well. And of course, these boys and their brother, these five brothers, were Jewish. And so why not encourage them to go? But it also was important for another reason, and that was at the end of this harvest season, it was a time for them to be able to pray and ask the Lord to be faithful to them in rain. And so they just got done with their harvest season, and so their crops are in, and they're, you know, the wine is being made and ends made, and these types of things, because they wanted to implore the Lord God to be bless them and to be faithful to them for the next harvest season when rain would come. And so in this Feast of Booths, or this Feast of Tabernacles, they would have two things here. And we're going to look at these two things, not today, but these two things will really make the passage jump off the page to us of why Jesus talks about water and light here in the next up through chapter 8. Why would he just say, I'm the light and I'm the water again, the living water? That's because of the Feast of Booths, the Feast of Tabernacles. In the Feast of Tabernacles or the Feast of Booths, there were two different celebrations that they did. One was the feast or the celebration of light, and one was the water ceremony. And I'll develop those more in the weeks to come, in the month to come. And so part of that water ceremony, though, was praying that God would give them rain for their crops for the next season. And so they would come together. And so, of course, do you remember what occupation Jesus and his family most were? Do you remember what they were? Were they agriculture? No, they were carpenters, okay? So they were a bunch of rich shiderers, Finnish carpenters, and that was their deal, and so they could provide goods and services in that realm. And so, of course, these Jewish males would go that were even in construction would go because their goods and services didn't put food, they didn't get the food directly from the ground for their family, and so they would have to barter and trade and those sorts of things for goods and services with somebody else that was a farmer. And so it was in everybody's interest that they came to this feast and would pray that God would be very faithful and would bless them abundantly with water. Now, if you go back to our most recent president's inauguration, do you remember when Franklin Graham got up there and he mentioned the blessing of rain? That's where this came from, this idea of the blessing of rain. Now, if you're a thinking person, you probably think of Noah, and that wasn't really a blessing of rain either. That rain wasn't a blessing, but this is what he actually intended, Mr. Graham intended when he said that. That's where that came from. That's a real-life instance of that use. But it came from this blessing. And so it would really be obvious when they said to him in verse 3, so his brother said to him, leave here and go to Judea, that your disciples also may see the works that you are doing. So I want you to go. It was a natural for them to go, but also they interject something else in here, which would have been another reason in verse 3 and verse 4. More directly, his brothers wanted his disciples, Jesus' disciples, to see the works that he had been doing up north. He's in the northern Galilee region, not in the southern Judean region. And so in verse 5, if you look down there, it says something very telling, though, that I think puts this in context. It says in verse 5, for not even his brothers believed in him. Okay, these brothers obviously being James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas. The question, I think, is why would they not believe in him? Or what's the context and what's going on here? The disciples in the southern area would not have obviously been able to be in the northern area at the same time. And so they didn't see all of these different things that were going on. And so his brother said, leave here that they may see your good works that you're doing. For no one works in secret if he seeks to be known openly, in verse 4. If you do these things, show yourself to the world. But his brothers, verse 5, didn't believe in him. And so here is this other reason in this area, is that they wanted Jesus, to go down so that way he could do these things openly, so that way he could show the world. It's very interesting that not even though his family didn't believe in him. Can I just make a quick application here for you with verse number 5? Perhaps there's somebody in your family that does not know Christ as Savior. Perhaps you have a really good friend that you wonder about. Perhaps there's somebody that you're very close to that you would even consider family that does not know Christ as Savior. Can I just encourage you this morning? Verse 5 says that his brothers didn't even believe in him. And yet they had a front row everything. They were able to spend more nights under the same roof with Jesus than anyone else. They had more meals with Jesus than anyone else. They were able to play little kids' games with Jesus more than any other little kid could. But even here in this section, his family rejected him. Now, I do want to encourage you as well, is that later on as we read, we'll get later on, his four brothers, after the resurrection, come to Christ and they understand. And they do come to faith. So I'm really just want to encourage you this morning as a quick application that maybe this is you in your life and you just kind of feel like you're beating your head against the wall. You feel like this person's never going to accept Christ, your family member or something. You know what? Jesus knows exactly what you're going through. His own family, his brothers rejected him. But there's hope. Because just as eventually as they accepted Jesus, the truth of who Jesus was, there is a day where your family too could understand that truth. Now I want to go back to verse 4, and we have a question I want to look past the blessing of rain. I want to look past this, oh, let just people see you here. But really this verse 5 makes me ask this question. And the question is, why would they want him to go and show these works if they don't believe in him? Then does it really matter if he shows these works? I mean, what would be the point of going to see these then, or for Jesus to display them if they don't believe? And so as you read through this, and maybe that thought came to your mind this morning, well, why would they really care if they didn't believe in him? And I think that's a really good question. The bottom line is we really don't know. There's a lot of speculation that could happen and a lot of different commentators and such. And so some speculate this way. Some, perhaps it was jealousy of the older brother who was the attention-grabbing one. You know, he did all these different things. And of course, you know, let's say these five brothers went down to the local Five and Dime, right? And they go down to pick up a dozen eggs, and they five of them walk into the store, and what happens? Well, all the people in the store kind of look, and they go up and they talk to Jesus while the other four boys, you know, it's like, okay, we'll go get the eggs. We don't get to talk to somebody. Nobody loves me. Everybody hates me. I'm going to eat worms, you know. And they just felt like this. Maybe that's it. Could be that type of thing. It could be just that they didn't like the claims that he made. They, if the Jewish people... excuse me, if the Jewish people wanted to kill him, as verse 1 tells us, perhaps his brothers didn't like the claims they made either, that Jesus made either, because these brothers would have been good Jewish boys as well, and they would have understand the Torah, they would have understand the teaching, they would have been looking for the Messiah, but here comes their brother, whom they've been around. He was never sinful, obviously, but they knew he was human, and they might have rejected him, and so perhaps they struggled with that, and they didn't like the claims he made. Perhaps it was just the stress that it created on the family because he was so popular and because people wanted to kill him. And so his family maybe had the proverbial rock thrown through the window in the middle of the night. We don't really know. Maybe they just wanted to see Jesus, the carnival Jesus, do another trick. The bottom line is we don't know, but we do know this. And I think there's a reason why we don't know exactly, okay, but we do know this. They pressured Jesus to be somebody, this miracle worker, and to do something, to do these miracles. And they pressured him to do it in a specific location in Jerusalem. And so what is happening in this passage is that Jesus now is receiving these pressures from his own brothers. I think some of the greatest pressures in life can come from family. I am the oldest of 9 kids. And so I have 4 other brothers, and I tell you that sometimes when the 4, well, when the most ever together would be 3, but when 4 out of the 5 of us were together, I can tell you that there was some of the most foolish daring going on ever. I dare you to do this, or I dare you to do that. And of course, if you were really a man, you did the dare, right? I dare you to go pick up this and go throw it at this car driving by, or I mean, all these just crazy things that I, of course, never dared my brothers to do those things. And I, of course, never gave in to their dares. But perhaps this great pressure, Jesus felt this great pressure with his brother saying, go, go, go. You know, I think that you can relate to that in your life as well. No matter what stage of life you are at, whether you're 11 and 12 years old, you have pressures in life on your schedule of popularity and busyness. You've got this to do and that to do, and then you've got this academic stuff, and then you have this fine art stuff, and then you've got this theater stuff, and you've got all these different pressures you feel like that are on your life. People to go, places to go, and people to please. Younger adults with academic achievement and performing, and then jockeying for position in life and future, and who you're going to marry, who you're not going to marry, love and not love, and all of these different things. And later on, the pressures of balance and work and family demands and a certain level of a lifestyle and life transition. And then later on in life, demands on your body. I don't know, I mentioned this in life group, and I don't know if you saw Pastor Vogel's most recent newsletter. But in that newsletter, he said, one of the good things about getting older is that our bodies help remind us that without him, we can do nothing. Perhaps you're kind of like him, where you feel like your mind is 20, but you just can't get out there and play tennis like you used to. Or you can't do the things that you used to do because your body's just older. And so you've got those different pressures of life, pressures of retirement income. When do I retire? When do I not retire? And there's a host of other things in every stage of life. Although it looks different, we all have demands and we all have decisions to make in our given contexts. And so for Jesus, the pressure to do and to be came from family for any number of reasons that we're not really sure. But nonetheless, the pressures were there. And so for us, the pressures in life come to do and to be. What do I do here? Where do I go? What is it I should be? What does this person expect of me? These pressures are real for us as well. And can I just encourage you this morning that Jesus knows your every pressure because he was pressured just like you are. I guess the question is, how do we handle those pressures in life? What do we say? What do we do? Well, what did Jesus do here? And I'm really encouraged by what Jesus does, because what we learn from the first thing we saw is that there was these pressures on time, these demands on time. But secondly, we learn that there is an unsuitable time. There's a right time and a wrong time, I guess you could say. But there is, secondly, an unsuitable time. Well, what do you mean, Pastor? What are you talking about, an unsuitable time? Well, if you look down at verse number 6, Jesus said to them, "My time has not yet come, but your time is always here." In verse 8, he says, "I am not going, for my time has not yet fully come." Jesus responds to the pressures that he gets from his brothers and his schedule here to go. And he says, "Look, you know what? My time isn't here yet." And he very plainly states this. And then in verse number 9, we see he says, after saying this, he remained where? What does it say? He remained in Galilee. He remained in the northern area. So his response here is that it wasn't his time. Now, I do want to pause here for a word of explanation so you understand this. John uses two phrases in his gospel. The first phrase he'll use is that my what has not come. Remember? His time, or the second way he says that is what? My hour. Very good. My hour has not come. What Jesus is saying here, and typically and when he says all the time, when he says my hour has not come, he's talking about the events of the atonement. He's talking about his death and burial, the death, burial, and resurrection. In other words, everything that encompasses the atonement. But what Jesus says here in this passage is he says that my time has not come. So is he referring to the atonement events, or is he referring to something else? I submit to you what he is saying here in context is he is referring to something else. And that something else is, as I mentioned earlier, the Feast of the Booths, or the Feast of Tabernacles. So as he goes through here, he is saying it's important for us to understand that there's a reason why he is not going to the feast yet. Okay? That's what he means by my time versus my hour. So the question becomes, why did Jesus say this? Why wasn't it his time to go to the feast? I mean, what was it that was keeping Jesus back? Well, look at verse number 7. Verse 7 says, "The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify about it that its works are evil." That its works are evil. Now, Jesus here was the source of resistance and the source of rebellion against the Jewish leaders. I like to always refer to them as the Jewish pastors. It's very interesting to me that these Jewish pastors, who should know the truth and should be leading them correctly, were really leading them into a false gospel, a gospel of self-righteousness. And then comes Jesus, and Jesus says, remember what he does? If you put all of what we've looked at in the Gospel of John, he goes to what? The wedding in Cana. He makes this water into wine, and he basically is saying, look, my wine is better. There's a feast that's coming that's even better than this wedding feast. And then what does he do? He tells Nicodemus. He says, you know what, Nicodemus? You've got to be born again. And Nicodemus realized, I can't born myself again. And that's right. Your born againness comes from faith. Faith in what I'm going to do. Faith in me. He teaches the Jewish people, and he heals on the Sabbath, remember? And Jesus is like, look, I am working on the Sabbath. There's only one person they let work on the Sabbath, and that was God, because he had to keep everything together. But yet Jesus says, I am working just as my Father is working. And so Jesus comes on the scene, and he is this revolutionary leader, but not in the sense that they knew. He's this revolutionary revelation. He's different. Resistance. And so Jesus is here, pushes against them. And that's why he says, he says to his brothers, look, my time's not here. They don't hate me, but you can go whenever you want because you're not the source or the object of their hate. So Jesus, after he tells them this, I think really he's saying there, if you look down in verse number 10, we see that his brothers, after he tells them this, says, but after his brothers had gone up to the feast. So they obviously go. And then now look down at verse 11. The Jews were looking for him, that is Jesus, at the feast, saying, where is he? Where is this Jesus? Verse 12. And there was much muttering about him among the people. Well, some said, he is a good man. Others said, no, he is leading people astray. Yet for fear of the Jews, that's specifically the Jewish pastors, no one spoke openly of him. And so the general sentiment here, coupled with verse number 1, is that they don't like Jesus at all. On a scale of 0 to 10, they like him like negative 12,000. They don't like this guy at all. And so I ask as I read this, why would Jesus not go anyway? I mean, he's God, right? Can they bully God? Was he scared? I mean, what's the point? Why would Jesus not go? And what I learned from this is, knowing who Jesus is, what I learned is that it just wasn't the right time for Jesus. There's obviously a good time and a bad time to do certain things. And so that's why I say number 2 here in this passage, there was an unsuitable time. The God-man, the creator Jesus, this is amazing to me, he had voluntarily submitted himself to live and be within time. The God who is above time and created time, and time doesn't relate to him like time relates to us. He voluntarily submitted himself to live within that time. And so Jesus demonstrates for us here that there can be a wrong time for things to happen. Because he just says, it's not my time, I'm not going. You go ahead. Which leads me to the final and third point of the message this morning, is that there is an appropriate time. If there's an unsuitable time or an inappropriate time, then there's got to be an appropriate time. And we see this in verse 10 and also in verse number 14. In verse 10, he says here, But after his brothers had gone up to the feast, then he also went up, but not publicly, but in private. Verse 14. And he went up about the middle of the feast, and he began to teach there in the temple. So as I look at this passage together, and I was studying, I'm looking through this, I'm thinking, why in the world? Is he scared of these bullies? I mean, because they want to kill him? Is Jesus not God? Well, of course he's God. Is he scared of them? He's not scared of them. Here's what it's teaching us. That there is a right time and a wrong time to do things. Jesus knew what God the Father's will for him was in his life. And he knew that the next time he was to come into Jerusalem, by the way, after this, the next time he comes into Jerusalem after this, this time would be the start of the Passion Week, would be the time he rides in on the donkey, would be the day, Palm Sunday, that we celebrate today. And he just knew it wasn't his time. He knew God was not ready for him. It was not his will at this time. And so there's an appropriate time to do things and there's an inappropriate time or an unsuitable time to do things. In this whole section, I want us to see some three very amazing truths by way of application. First of all, God is sovereign over all things, including our time and timing. This reason that God didn't want Jesus to go to the feast, he didn't want him to go until the middle of it. Did you pick that up in verse 14? About day 3 or 4. The feast was specifically 7 days, but day 8 on the Sabbath, they would rest and they would rejoice. And so they would call this technically 7 days, but 8-day feast almost. And so Jesus goes up day 3 or day 4. Why? Well, you're going to learn exactly why the next couple weeks after Easter. But what we learn here is that God is in control of timing and he knows what he's doing. In your life, are there things that you have asked God for? Are there things that you've begged God for and they haven't happened? Perhaps it's peace with a certain situation. Perhaps it's a job thing. You know, perhaps it's all of these different things. I couldn't help as I was studying, but thinking about Sandy and the provision of the job, which she shared with us on recently, where the Lord has provided. But there was a time there. There was a few weeks there in between that time. You know, that could have really... Why now? Why this job? You know what? Because it was God's timing for you, sis. And that's the best thing that could have happened, even though it might have been uncomfortable in between. You kind of wonder, like, okay, why did I have to get sick now? Or why did the doctors, after 250 surgeries, right? Why can't they? And all I can, I don't know. I don't know everything. I don't know much other than this, that God is in control. And so those different things in your life of why God allows to happen or he says no or he says wait, God is sovereign and he knows the perfect time of why, where and when and how he wants to accomplish in your life what he wants to accomplish. Can I just encourage you that way, that God is sovereign? The second thing that I see is that Jesus really teaches me out of this, teaches us, is that Jesus sees the bigger picture. His brothers didn't see the bigger picture. They just maybe were sick and tired of this. Maybe they wanted to see the carnival brother again. I don't know. But in the bigger, Jesus sees the bigger picture in life. The point is, timing is really important. This week when Doc and I were talking with Howard Wentz up there, he relayed a story to us. And he did this the first time as well. But we were just he was just reflecting upon God's grace in his life. And he said, you know how I met my wife? Him and I think a few of his buddies were out cruising one night. And they were in this car, and they went around this block. And they came up to the intersection of the two roads where was a bus stop, right? Was it a bus stop? Yeah, it was a bus stop. And there were these, I think, three girls waiting there, one of which was his wife, wife-to-be. And so they pulled up kind of up there to the girls, and they saw them, and obviously one of them had smitten his heart. So he drives around the block again, and he goes up, and he says to the girls, him and his buddies there, hey, you guys, two, it was him and one other guy, that's right, because there's three girls and the two of them, two of those fellas. And they said, hey, you guys want to get in the car, and we'll take you to wherever, you know, you want to go. Well, they said, no, thank you, right? daughters, don't ever do what I'm about to tell you to do, or what he did, all right? Don't ever do this. This is bad. So they just were like, okay. So they go around the block again, and they come back, and they tried one more time. And they said, hey, you know, come on, get in the car. We'll take you where you want to go. And you know what those three girls did? They got in the car. And that was the beginning of their relationship. Howard took his future wife, which he didn't know at the time, took her home and dropped her off along with the two other girls. The point is, if a bus had come, and he said this, he said, what if the bus had come earlier? You just never know. But you do know, God's timing is always perfect. And for whatever crazy reason those girls got in that car, God's timing was always perfect. Again, that's not permission. You four girls, I'm looking at you right here. Don't you go home to your fathers. Donovan, I'm not saying this. You say, get in a car with a boy. If you do that, you're in deep trouble with your parents, especially your fathers. Don't do it. Okay? There's an appropriate time and an inappropriate time for things. And all I want you to see in this is that God is sovereign and that timing is important. And we'll see why more specifically in the next messages. Lastly, what I want to see here by way of application is because Jesus knows what he's doing, and because he sees the bigger picture, and because God is sovereign over all, is that not our reason to trust him? Trust doesn't really come naturally for us, I think. You know, I think you guys that are in school, whether it's at Columbus State or OSU or other places, Cedarville, whether you are, whatever stage of life you're at, it's hard to trust God. You wonder, man, God, what are you doing? How long do I have to do this? When am I going to meet the right guy, or when am I going to meet the right girl, or when am I going to... Younger people, and you're going through tests, and you study for 10 hours, and it's a two-question test, and you miss one, and you get a 50, and it's just you throw your hands up, and you don't know what to do. There's a billion different ways of application, but can I just really encourage you, because of who God is and because he sees the bigger picture, can you just trust him all the more? You know, sometimes in life, brother, we don't know what he's doing. Just trust him all the more. Sometimes we wonder where God is. We talked about that in our life group. Just trust him. Patiently wait on him. There'll be pressures for you in life, influences to do or to be or to act, and it will seem so very overwhelming, but you can trust Jesus. You can trust him because he understands. And you can trust Jesus because he felt the same pressures as you. And you can trust Jesus because he said, I'll never leave you and I'll never forsake you. And you can trust Jesus because he was proven to be faithful. You can trust Jesus because he wasn't selfish. He didn't come to do his will. And he did the will of the Father. And you know what that will of the Father was? The Father was on March the 29th, around 33 AD, was for him to get on a donkey and ride into Jerusalem like he did. This day, March 29th, a couple thousand years ago almost, he marched in just like Solomon did when Solomon got on the donkey and went into Jerusalem. And what he was saying is that this is the Messiah. He is the king. But so many people didn't understand what that meant. That thought he was the great Roman liberator. He was going to set up the Davidic throne again and they would all sing Kumbaya and eat manna again. And yet, that's exactly what he did. He was the great liberator. And they did eat manna. Remember we talked about that? Because Jesus was the better manna. Jesus is all sufficient. And you know what? That's why we can trust him. Jesus understands, because a suffering servant would bear your sin. He would be crucified and raise himself up to walk in newness of life. He knows the right time. And in this passage, it just wasn't time for him to go to the feast. It's just that simple. And in your life, sometimes it's just not the right time, but you can trust Jesus. I hope that encourages you this morning. Can we pray together? If you'll just bow your head, I want you to interact with this truth this morning. just interact with it. And, you know, I want to pray for you this morning specifically. And I'm not going to pray for you by calling you out by your name or whatever. But if you'll just do this, if you'll say, you know, Pastor, this really, I needed this, and I am struggling in whatever stage of life, I mean, you're in. I'm just struggling with this truth that God is, knows what He's doing, and that He is, His timing is perfect. Would you do me a favor and just look at me until I see your eyes? Just look at me, all right? All right? Okay. I see Him in the back. Oh, God, so many people this morning just looked up and just said, you know, Pastor, I am struggling. Lord, can we take a fresh and a renewed, a reminded belief this morning that You are sovereign and in control? God, that You, there's times when we don't understand what You're doing. We don't understand Your timing. And we might get pressures from people to do and to be or to act or whatever. But help us, Lord, just to be patient and wait on You, because Your timing is perfect. And I really think that's just the plain meaning of the text here. You weren't scared. It just wasn't the right time. And You knew that. And so, God, because You knew that, and because You see the bigger picture, and because You're trustworthy, we believe You and trust You. And so help us, Lord, supernaturally give us strength, supernaturally encourage us this morning and the days to come and this week as we live it, to be encouraged, to know that You are in control. And we ask this in Jesus' name. All God's people said, may you walk faithfully this week. May we uphold each other in prayer. And if you need help, reach out to your brothers and sisters. But the Lord be with you as you live this week.